sense right there.
Right.
That.
Hello. Good evening, everybody. My name is Keith Coogan. We're here with Earl Skakel, and you're listening to The Call Sheet. Thank you so much for tuning in. Yeah, let that rock up a bit. That's my friend Jeff Fiorentino. He's got a great website, jfrocks.com, writes and plays some music and teaches you how to play the guitar. I swear. And if you've been, like, intimidated by it and you're frightened of the guitar, check it out. You'll really dig it. You'll dig his stuff. Thanks, Jeff, for the tunes. And here we are, downtown Los Angeles at Skid Row Studios. The place looks beautiful. We got the disco ball going.
This is great. I mean, this is a real operation. And I can't even put into words how excited I am about a special guest.
We have a special guest. When I lay eyes on the guest, I will let you know who our very special guest is. And, you know, for those that may have joined the show for a number of reasons, to hear about Hollywood or to, you know, current events or learn about, you know, a child actor or something like that, you know, you might be interested in our next guest. So,
yes,
I wouldn't say child actor. I've known him and he's more adolescent and up, if you will, and a really good gentleman. And we'll be joined here shortly by a surprise guest. So, Earl, what's up? How's the week been?
Oh, by the way, I know we have some Canadian listeners. A big shout out to the LA Kings, who won the game tonight 3-1 on the road in St. Louis.
Nice.
To take a 1-0 series lead.
Nice. That's, I love my Kings. I really do.
They got a chance this year. I mean, this is, I know this isn't a sports talk show, but LA will slowly turn into a hockey town if the Kings can get into the third round, because then the buzz builds up. The Lakers probably won't win it this year, so they need a team to glob onto.
Yeah, we don't have much, Lakers and Kings, and that's it, and a football team, and that's been... You know, that's been rough. So it all goes into the other sports. I think hockey gets its share. I've been to a few Kings game, and they're great. Fun.
Yeah. I mean, they're like, I think I've said this before, but they're like Kiss. You know, you put on a Kiss CD and you're like, wow, this is kind of bad music. But then you see them live, do the same songs, and you're like, my God, this is the greatest band of all time. You have to see hockey live. You just have to.
I'd heard Kiss songs years later after. More of during their resurgence the last 5 years. Remember when Detroit Rock City had came out?
Oof.
And a few of the singles, I went, that really? That was Kiss? It was more rocky anthem, and I was in sing along, and I don't know. I didn't remember many of their big hits. It wasn't, it was a B cut, but I still, it was very singable. And like we see, that was my first concert, Earl, was Kiss.
Wow, what year was that?
78.
See, that's when they were at the tail end of their prime. You know, the drugs hadn't kicked into Ace and Peter's system yet. So, you know, it's really Gene and Paul carrying the weight for a long time. Because, you know, Peter didn't even play on any albums past 78. So, you know, that's why they put the 4 solo albums out on the same day, which you'll never see a band do again. I mean, that's how big they were. They put 4 solo albums out. What band could do that today?
No band. You could have gotten away with it with like Guns N' Roses or something like that. Maybe, sort of. I mean, and a few of them wouldn't have sold well, but.
But I mean, I would think maybe you too. But who the hell wants to buy the drummer solo album? I mean, most people couldn't even say his name. I think it's Edge, right?
The guitar player is Edge.
Oh, wow, what the hell? I'm thinking of Edge the wrestler. Sorry.
It's like an Adam in there and some sort of...
Larry.
A Bono and a Larry. Yeah, I think that's it.
There you go. Who's going to buy an album with just Larry on the cover? Probably me.
Larry's ska hits.
Right, well, that's what Kiss does. Kiss has jumped on every... You know, if salsa was in vain right now, Kiss would put out a salsa album. They jump trends.
Oh, I like the bossa nova trend of the 50s or 60s. And every comics, actors were putting out their vibe album, their jazz albums, and their martini albums. And there's some horrid, horrid, bad vanity albums by stars.
Oh, I thought you meant Vanity, Prince's girl. I'd buy a salsa album from her.
That stuff's genius. What are you talking about? Anything Prince touches is genius.
See, I'm fascinated by the guitar player in Prince's band. This guy by the name of Des Dickerson. He's the guy who wore the little Asian bandana. He found God in 85, so he quit the band. He's like, if you're going to find God, Prince is probably not the guy for you to be singing with. You know, Darling Nikki and, you know, all those dirty, dirty songs. And this guy's probably going, I can't play this. Oh, wait, here's the first publishing check. Maybe I can.
Prince is his own religion.
Yeah.
His own church. Church of Prince.
He really is, boy.
He locked down his stuff, too.
A real womanizer.
Not really. Oh, well. Allegedly.
Oh, of course.
Sure. But he also did produce and launch many careers.
Yeah, Apollonia.
Oh, and just the people he wrote hits for.
He's very talented. He doesn't get he's a great guitar player, but he never really gets the credit because the way he looks. Hmm. You know, the gyrations and the teardrop guitars.
It's funkadelia.
Yeah.
It's sexadelic and chocolate and it's yummy and it's soul and get off.
Because you got to forget how good he is as a musician.
Diamonds and Cream or what's that?
Diamonds and Pearls.
Diamonds and Pearls. Oh, come on.
Wendy and Lisa.
It's also.
In the movie, Purple Rain.
He got maybe one of the next African-American performers on MTV with 1999 after Michael Jackson broke the mold. I mean, Prince, we didn't care. He was just so extravagant. I don't think it mattered. What his race is, not sure altogether what his race is. Do you know what Prince's background is? He's,
I would guess, some part black.
Sure.
I would say black.
That's a great.
He's light skinned. I mean, you know, you don't have to be, Dikembe Mutombo skin color to be black.
Well, he's American right there, so we don't have to.
Well, no one knows his real name. I mean, Prince.
Single?
Oh, he's single. He's not getting married.
On Wikipedia right now, and I'm not seeing any sort of race mentioned even on the parents.
Well, he's born in Minnesota, I think, or Minneapolis.
Yeah, Minneapolis.
You know, I would guess he has to be black, just African-American.
Sure.
Videos really made him, though, you know. People forget he was booed off the stage at the Coliseum opening for The Who.
Well, opening for The Who, I don't know if that's a good fit.
Well, there's a similar situation right now. Kool and the Gang is opening up for Van Halen. I don't know whose idea that was.
Really? That could work. Maybe you'll bring many people and both crowds. And that's I know my mom is a fan of both.
Well,
she'd go to that show.
I could see Van Halen fans being into Kool and the Gang, going, hey, these guys have a groove, even though it's, you know, they were such a big band. I think it's only like two original guys now. But I don't see Kool and the Gang fans staying to see David Lee Roth and his assless chaps. I could be wrong, though.
What's the Slippery When Wet?
That's Bon Jovi.
Okay, Bon Jovi, yeah.
You gotta see the original album cover for that didn't quite make it in the stores. By the way, I was watching, speaking of Bon Jovi, you know, this should give us all hope and dreams. Scandal. Remember the group Scandal with Patti Smith, Goodbye mm-hmm. to You? Mm-hmm. They did a demo, and you can find it on YouTube, called Love's Got a Line on You. And you see a very young John Bon Jovi as just a schlub rhythm guitar player. Good song, too. Really, guys. Girls, go to YouTube, Scandal, Love's Got a Line on You, and you'll see a very young John Bon Jovi.
Is it spelled differently?
I think they
Giovi, is it all Italianized originally? Isn't his name a little spelled differently originally?
I don't think it was Giovi.
I love the name changes that celebrities go through. Just shortening it down to one is great.
But you're right.
To be just known as, you know, Scott or Cher or whatever, you know, that would be great.
Fabio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally.
What's his real name? Who knows?
Fabio.
Yeah, I guess it is. Or, you know, like they do a lot in heavy metal, like Axl Rose's real name is William Bailey / Saul Hudson. But my favorite fake name is the drummer from Poison. His name is Ricky Rocket. But his real name is even worse. It's Richard Rehm.
Yeah, that's not a good real name. I had a friend who was a grip, and the only porn he ever did, he used his real name. So it'll be Grip and it'll say his real name. And then the rest of the actual union and regular TV and film work he did, which was a tremendous amount of work and all really like A-list movies and stuff. He used his kind of a fake name that everyone called him on the strip, on the set, a nickname. And so he flipped it, used his real name in the porn.
I mean, to each his own, I wouldn't really use my real name in a porn. If you have a somewhat halfway decent imagination, you should come up with a good name, like, you know, I don't know, Rock Savage, or, you know, something
good. Your middle name and the street you grew up on as a kid.
See, I thought it was your first dog's name.
Oh no, that's awful. That could be ugly.
Yeah, Reed Roca.
We have a special guest here tonight, and he's waving behind Earl.
He's seen one of my comedy shows before. Yeah, seriously, guys, we're going to make the audience guess who this is. We'll give out little clues.
Yeah.
Finish him.
We have a caller, and they could know. I think I tipped off everybody on the internets. So.
Finish him, Johnny.
That's a good clue.
I can beat this guy.
Where's the green room? Is there a green room?
There's no, dude, you just walked right through it. Good to see you. Hold on, I got to give Big Hugs 1 second, please.
What's hey, what's man? Happening?
How are you?
How are you?
Dude, I'm here, okay? I'm sorry, but I'm here.
It's so great to see you.
Thanks, man. You too.
You too.
We're live on, hey, everybody. On radios and
internet. Guys, call in with your questions. We got a special guest. We're not going to tell you who it is. Just give out select, you know, hints. This guy's IMDb page is longer than the Constitution.
It should be longer.
Keith, you want this?
That'd be great. Thanks. You're on. Good to see you, man.
Oh yeah.
This guy. It's what a great attitude on set and in life, and really just love you, man, like
thank
a brother.
You, man. Thank you, buddy. You too, man. We've done a couple things. We have and
had fun every Always. Single one of them, and I am really impressed with the success of Python, which is now hinting to the audience a little more.
Oh yeah,
because you went on and continued. Oh,
yeah, and they turned me into a they turned me dark. I was in the first one, I was kind of nice, you know, I was a cop.
Yeah,
and then in the sequel, Python 2, like I was a killer. So, who
am I? Did you make
I?
It into Special Forces, though? Isn't that? No, you wanted to in the first movie.
Yes, in Bulgarian Special Forces, though.
Bulgarian. Yeah. Did they run off and UFO start doing all of their movies in Bulgaria?
Yes. They shut down.
How was that experience going to Bulgaria?
You didn't go ever to Bulgaria?
No, I didn't go to Bulgaria.
Oh, man.
No Prague, no Bulgaria.
Honestly, it was worth doing those movies. It was so much fun. I lived there. I moved there. I lived in Sofia I did like four of those movies.
And then, how long were each shoot?
They were like 3 weeks.
Wow.
3 weeks, yeah.
Busting your balls on that.
Literally, though. I mean, it was different. Like, there's, you know, the craft service is not what you expect. It's like, you know, it's Bulgarian, like, baloney. You know, you don't even know what it is.
Oh, no.
But, the people were so great, man. Really great. And it's right near the Black Sea, like, just a 4-hour bus drive to the Black Sea. So in between my breaks, you know, as I was sitting there in the summer, I'd go down there and just hang out on the beaches. And I mean, it was a lifestyle. It was so much fun. I ended up literally got an apartment there and stayed there for 6-8 months. And then I'd come back to LA, and then I moved everything out of, into storage in LA, and I moved to Eastern Europe for a while.
Because of that.
Oh, yeah. Is it any Vancouver or is it?
well, back then, I mean, it's a little more expensive now, but then, I mean, like you could buy a drink for 10 cents, you know, get, so everything was, you know, really cheap and, you know, so it was a blast, but no, it's no Vancouver.
Are these effects driven movies? Are these all effects or were some just thrillers or action?
No, they're all like, you know, semi almost good special effects that you go, man, if you just put a little more money into these, this could actually be a good movie. You know, if you just got another writer on the script and tweaked a couple lines, you know, I ended up literally on Python 2, literally got to Bulgaria, looked at the script, and I asked Phil, the producer, I'm like, can I make some rewrites on it? He's like, yeah, do whatever you want. Like, it's that loose. Like, they don't care. Like, yeah, do whatever you want. So I literally got in his computer and rewrote all, I rewrote the whole entire thing, and the whole cast got a blue sheet that I typed up. So literally, I tweaked it. It's a true story. I mean, I literally rewrote the script there. I mean, they had me like being like the, doing all kinds of stuff that was told. I'm like, what happened to my character? Like in Python 1, and here we are talking about Python because it's such an enormous blockbuster smash.
Well, we have to stick with the, you know, the original, what is it? The continuity of the original. I mean, we can't retcon Python. That would be sacrilegious.
Right. I don't know why you didn't come too. You know, we needed a...
Man, I lived through the first one, which
yeah, so did I. We were like the only survivors.
That was genius.
That was a fun movie, though. Actually, I enjoyed that film. You know,
oh, I did too. I had such a blast shooting it.
Yeah, me too.
From the first table read, I went, "This is going to be so fun."
Yeah,
everyone got it. Robert Englund really set a great tone.
Yeah, he was great.
If he could have fun with it, then I'm like, what am I worried about being
exactly
a movie?
Right. And then the cast just kept getting like piled on: Casper Van Dien, and then Jenny McCarthy, and. You know, it's just like an abstract, bizarre, fun show. I wish they put a little more into the snake because the snake looked, you know, the CG effects. See, like UFO and some of these like independent sci-fi companies, they develop this software that does like second-rate CG effects. You know, so it's like, but it's good enough for DVD, but you can never blow it up to a print and put it in the theaters. So they've got these, you know, these special magic tricks that work on television. They kind of look okay. You always know when you're watching a movie like that, it's like, oh, they didn't use the... real expensive stuff. They squeak by, and they didn't have aspirations for it to actually ever be in a theater. That was my biggest thing with Phil. I was like, why don't you make these scripts just a little bit better, you know, and just put a little more money into them and you can get them released. You know why? Because it's business. He didn't carry a DVD, you know.
Another kind of series we worked on in a weird way was the PM Entertainment. And you were all powerful with the ring.
Yeah, that's right. What was that?
Was that great?
Power Within.
Yeah. And they had quite an assembly line there, too. UFO was one company that kept cranking out movies and had sets and just used them over and over again. Same with PM. Same location, same houses, same cars.
Hey, I just want to comment and compliment you on your radio voice. How do I get that? You got this really good...
You got it, man.
No, I don't. Is it the mic? Because you just sound golden,
I'm
dude.
Batman. Thanks, man. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Your ears of just yapping my mouth, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. I'm good to see you. Well, we're joined right now. I'm going to, you know, let the audience know we have Billy Zabka in the house, which is, a great honor because I'm a fan as well.
And you as well, man. We're like old school, you know.
Really fun and honor to work with you a couple of times.
Yeah,
and you've had, you know, stellar. You just keep doing it, keeping up great work.
Thanks, yeah.
You know, and look, and aging well as well. You're sexy, man.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, yeah.
No, you do look good, man.
Really? The first thing you say, that's really nice. Really?
I mean, I'm straight, but you look good.
Really? Thank you very much.
No problem.
I appreciate it. You know, it's so funny. You guys are both wearing glasses. And like on the way down here, I'm trying to find directions to get to this place. And I'm like this. Like I'm at that point right now where I'm in denial that I need reading glasses. You know, and I swear it's the cell phones and like all the like micro stuff that we're reading that are tweaking our eyes. I don't know. But like, you know, my eyes are jacked on the way down here. I'm like holding the thing 5 feet from my hand to see where to turn.
Violation of California law.
What's that? Driving without glasses.
Touching your phone in any way. You touched that's it. You're violated.
Right, but you could turn your radio, you know what I mean? You can...
Yeah, and technically they can, you know, driving while distracted, putting on makeup, eating or whatever. They're like, oh, and we want to strip search you now. Any arrest, they can now strip search you.
No.
Yeah, dog poop, a back child support, whatever. Any arrest in California... and they're like, well, you're going to go into the prison population and be processed, and we can't have anything in there, even if it was for like a third degree misdemeanor or whatever. So any arrest, and they can strip search you. This just went down. Pretty scary.
That has that happened? That hasn't ever happened to you?
I mean, I try to make it happen every night. It's pretty fun, actually. No, but that's just a new kind of, you know, yeah. We've been losing things here and there, all in the name of security.
Right, right. I know. Things.
I try not to get too political, but I do.
Right, it's hard not to.
And, you know, it's good to see you.
You too,
you've been busy. You've been just hammered pre and hammered. Post. And
yeah. I'm mostly behind the camera. Like, I mean, I'm acting here and there, you know, did this and that. But, like, I started out wanting to be behind the camera. Before I ever did one movie, I was in film school. Like, when I did Karate Kid, I was at Northridge going to film school. And then after that, I went back to UCLA, back to Northridge to finish, and then I got back to school. And then, I kept going back to film school. And then UCLA, and then back to Equalizer. So my whole, like, I mean, I was aspirations. I've never went to acting classes. I went to filmmaking classes. So, you know, then that happens and you go on that ride. And so now it's like, and then you do a bunch of movies that you don't really like. Like, that's what I mean. Like with Phil, like I would be in there and I'm like, why don't you make them better? And then I got that urge to like create more, and you'd be frustrated because you read a script and go, oh man, I could see how this works. And then you see the final product and go, why didn't they do this and that? So I just started taking it on myself and started making my own stuff. So I'm mostly directing, writing, producing. Editing, and I'm also, you know, so I'm editing a doc right now and shooting a little fun test pilot and some music videos, directing that and cutting that. So I'm like back to back on all that. And then between, you know, I've got some acting stuff lined up. There's a great mini series that we got to get you on if possible. It's called Two Appomattox, about the Civil War. It's kind of like Band of Brothers. It's awesome.
I think an awful Civil War.
You'd be soldier. Awesome, dude. No. You just black out your teeth, you know, and, you know, grow that grizzly out.
And then done there over there on the other side of the hill, go and get them.
Yeah. Exactly. Go get them with that black powder.
I can't find the colonel. I can't find him.
Right. My eardrum's blown.
We have a caller, 818. Thanks, Valley. How are you?
Coogan, I am well. It's Mark. I was excited the minute I heard who the guest was tonight. Another hero of my childhood. Congratulations on your Oscar nomination, by the way, Mr. Zabka.
Thank you.
Three.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Are you calling from the next room, or is this a real call?
This is a real call.
Cool, man.
Yeah, I was also really proud of you when you did that.
Oh, right on. That's my old stomping grounds.
I saw Karate Kid, of course, in the movie theater like everybody else when I was in elementary school. And when we got home, I got home that afternoon, of course, like all elementary school kids, we're on the playground and we're trying to recreate the stuff. And
right.
I tried for years to recreate the thing where you're on your back and you pop up very quickly.
Yeah, the kip. It's called a kip.
Yeah. I never had the abs to do that, and I actually broke my nose one time at soccer practice trying to do that. Just popping myself in the nose.
Right.
And it was just, you know, but it's, you know, that or it's swim practice. I remember going to see back to school with my swim team, you know, just little things.
Right.
You know, you and Coogan and a lot of those guys who were, we are now all contemporaries as we're seasoned but not older in age, you know, so thank you for being part of that amazing part of my younger years.
Hey, Mark, my pleasure. You managed to do a great drive-by on some of the best credits I was seeing in there. I mean, just back to school, my God.
Yeah. That's crazy. That kip took a lot of practice, though. Like, don't feel bad. And it wasn't the abs. It was just how you distribute the weight. I'll show it to you. I'm in Burbank, so we'll...
Coogan knows how to reach me too. So if I could post on Facebook sometime in the next 6 months, learned how to do a kip by Billy Zabka, that would probably be the highlight of my year.
All right, we could work that out. Keith will hook that up. All right, we'll go to the park. There's some like great parks in that area, you know, Johnny Carson Park, like, you know, by NBC or something.
Oh, wow.
We'll go right there. We'll just set up a mat, do some kips, and I'll bring out a diving board.
Can we put on, like, 80s, like, wrist bracelets and stuff and film it? And
headbands, like, weightlifting gloves, the whole nine yards.
Here's a really radical move we learned yesterday.
Yeah, we can, you know, tricking in the park, you know, doing backflips and stuff. Oh, incidentally, before Billy got there, favorite stage names. Arnold George Dorsey's is probably my favorite, and that's Engelbert Humperdinck. Sting, don't forget, is Gordon Matthew Thomas Sumner. when you're talking about stage names for musicians.
Gordon Sumner, yes.
And then John Bon Jovi, John Francis Bon Jovi Jr.
John Francis Bon Jovi Jr.
What about Gene Simmons?
That doesn't work as much. Does Gene Simmons have a...
I am Wits. I am Wits. That's Gene Simmons. He's Jewish.
Oh, and a great song from that era, Pour Some Sugar on Me.
What were they talking about?
You know, I wouldn't know and probably couldn't say it over, you know, the censors probably would get a little upset.
We have no censors here.
You can say whatever you want on this talk show.
Well, as a girl I dated in college used to refer to it as honey on her tongue.
Okay. So, yeah. Thanks for the call, Mark.
I had a question, actually, yeah. Very quickly.
I bet you did.
In the transitioning behind the camera, you know, as a writer and a director, what for you is your favorite part of just the creative process? Wow. Especially when you get to work with a talent like Coogan.
I try to steal
scenes from him unabashedly.
You mean as a filmmaker, right? You mean
yes, sir.
I love every step of the way. I love the creation process, and that happens in every form. I like that it changes from concept to writing to casting. I love the scouting. I love locations. I love picking colors, wardrobe. I love picking the crew. I love picking the DP, the lenses, the camera. I like love shooting. Love watching days. I think where I live with the film and with my stuff the most, and I guess it's enjoyable, but it's a little more hermitish is in the post, because I'm an editor too. So I mean, I love watching after all that's done, sitting with the computer and, you know, and some candles and, you know, some incense, you know, and making the magic in post, because really the cut is everything, and, you know, the timing and the music and everything. I love the whole process of it. And I equally love acting, but there's something really fulfilling. Like when I did Most, which was my short that was nominated, I did that in Eastern Europe. We went out to make that film. We had no money. We had no budget. We had an idea for a movie, and we scouted, and we just believed we were going to make this short film. And we scouted 8 countries, and then we cast it, and then we crewed it up, and we rented these 1930s steam trains and this massive thing. And before we had a dollar, and the money came after all that. And so the adventure of going out with the idea, with a vision, and watching that come to life, it's kind of like having babies, you know? So I don't know. So I like each part.
To the best of my knowledge, I haven't done that yet. But the best. Oh, yeah. And the last question: are you going to use your Tang Soo Do studies to ever make a new kind of fun movie that reinvents martial arts and movies like Karate Kid did?
You know what? Actually, yeah. I mean, I've got something. Have you seen my Sweep the Leg music video?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Something along those lines. I want to do something like that, but longer. So yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm not really a martial artist. I was trained for the movie, and then I did it a little bit after that.
You were an athlete before that, right?
Yeah, I was a wrestler in high school and played all the different sports and everything. But yeah, I bring wrestling up because that's the most connected to martial arts and being limber and everything, and the training.
No wrestling in Texas, only football.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, but I was too small to be a football player in L.A. I graduated high school the same height I am now, which is like almost 6'1", and I weighed 135. Now I weigh 155, and but I was too little to play varsity sports, and I wasn't going to play anything less, so I got into wrestling. Plus, my dad and my uncles were all wrestlers, and that was like amazing conditioning. And if it wasn't for that, I don't think I would have ever got the Karate Kid, because I still can't believe like sometimes that I got it, because I didn't know any karate when I went into it. And it was just because my conditioning and my, you know, my abilities at that time were able to be formed by the trainers on that. Otherwise, they would have given it to somebody else.
Yeah, never watch Karate Kid or a movie where you, from those days where you have your shirt off when you're on a date, especially if she's going to see you with your shirt off later, because it's just not a fair comparison. So thanks for thanking
my pleasure.
Thanks for my call, guys.
You bet. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
All right.
Elizabeth Shue.
Yes. Love her. How much do you love her? You want to fight over her?
Dude, I will so get killed instantly over
No,
her.
No. I don't mean literally. I'm just saying.
You know, like, and it was, you know, never to be. I was much younger and could pine over her. But here you had her. And look how you treat her.
Right. I was just with some producers last night at CSI, and she's doing that now. So
great on the show.
Yeah.
So great on the show.
Yeah.
Fits right in there.
She's like great. I love her. I mean, she's just great.
832 area code. We have a caller.
Uh-oh. What about Joyce?
Hey, my name is Carlos. I'm just calling in. I just want to say big fan.
Of who?
The show?
Oh, yeah, the show. It's a good show, man. I'm really into it. And Will Zabka.
Right on, man. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah, good stuff. You guys were talking about Elizabeth Shue. Did you ever date her or anything?
I went to the... Did you ever date her, Keith?
Hell no.
Oh, yeah. No, we never dated. No. Never dated Lisa Shue. I did go to the premiere with her, though, of The Karate Kid, or what, a premiere screening, whatever. And that was about the closest we ever got to dating was walking across Westwood Boulevard together.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. The only thing I've done on Westwood Boulevard,
big thing, though.
I can't mention on this show.
What's that?
Wait, what was that, caller?
Yeah. What was that?
I said, the only thing I've done on Westwood Boulevard, I can't mention on this show.
Hey-o.
But I did used to go to Equinox right there on Wilshire when I had money. What was I going to say? What gym did you go to when you were working out for the Karate Kid?
You know what? That's the funniest question I've ever had, but I'm going to tell you proudly. It's called Racquetball World in Woodland Hills.
Racquetball World!
Do you remember that?
Wally Ball? Remember Wally Ball?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Dude.
Absolutely. I lived there. In fact, I got my audition when I was at Racquetball World. I got my manager called, Frank Campana, goes, Billy, I got paged. Billy, you got an audition for the Karate Kid. He was this big, heavy Italian guy. And I'm like, the Karate Kid, what's that? And he goes, oh, you got to be some black belt motorcycle rider. I'm like, I don't ride motorcycles and I don't know karate. He goes, just go down. They called for you, you know? So I'm like, all right. So I literally left the gym in my sweats, tank top, and the headband that I was wearing and went to Columbia And I walked in and I met Penny DuPont, Caro Jones, the casting directors, who I had met on another audition that I didn't get. And they're like, we remembered you from this other interview. We think you might be right for this. Here's a script. And then go home and read it and come back and audition for us. That's how that all started.
How did you get your manager at the time to get you that audition?
Well, he was a friend of my father's, and my father was in film. So he was kind of a friend of the family. And he had a couple guys like... God bless him. He had this small little office in Ventura Boulevard in Encino. Yeah. He had a couple clients like Vito Scotti and like people he never heard of before, you know. And like as soon as I got, so he kind of worked for me on the side. Like he kind of helped out. But he wasn't actually my manager until after The Karate Kid. But I started doing commercials when I was 10. So I already had agents and everything. Yeah. I did like 17 or something commercials before I ever did The Karate Kid. In fact, that's I was with a commercial agency time. When I got The Karate Kid.
Oh, well, were you rep by at an agency?
What agency was it?
Yeah.
I'd rather not plug them.
Oh, okay. You were not into it. That was like the Wild West for the old agencies.
No.
All of my child agents.
I'll tell you who I was with. I had a great agent. His name was Vaughn Hart, who's now independent. I think he's out there. But he was with Sutton Barth & Venari. That was my commercial agency. And I was there for... From the time I was 10, as was my sister and my little brother. And Vaughn Hart was my kind of point guy there. And I had a meeting one day and I'm like, hey, I want to go on auditions for movies. And at that time, I don't know, I guess started going on. My first audition I ever went on was for The Outsiders, actually.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I met on that. That was my first audition. And then, like, I don't know, Emerald Forest was another one.
Great movie.
Yeah. Emerald Forest, cool. Actually, I never got that, but that's where they met me for... That was the same casting people for Karate Kid. Anyway, there's some trivia, some on-air live trivia for you, my man.
Real Hollywood trivia. There was a big agent around that time named Jay Maloney, who was a USC dropout who was working for Michael Ovitz at CAA at the time.
Oh, right.
He would go on to hang himself like 10 years later.
Jesus.
But, like,
wow.
Before he was like 35, but at the time he was like this big agent there and he reps like Oscar winners. And so it was a different time then for the agencies. They were very crazy then. It was like the Wild West. It was very interesting stuff. Wow. And I was just wondering if you had any part in that kind of stuff. Not like...
What, in Jay Maloney's suicide?
Right.
Yeah, were you there?
Yeah. No. I was my dad was an assistant director for, like, he did Clint Eastwood movies for 20 years and De Niro movies and stuff. I was raised, like Keith, in entertainment. I was raised on a set. When I was 5 years old, I was in NBC Studios in New York, walking on the set of The Doctors, a soap opera my dad was a director on, and I literally grew up in it. But I was always kind of, so I never, like, I don't know, my parents kept me really sheltered from the business, even though I was in it. It was always a hobby. It was always like, don't take it too seriously. Like, if you take it too seriously, if you don't get the part and you come home crying, we're going to put you in baseball or something. Like, just have fun with it. Which really was cool because it set my whole attitude towards towards the business, which is even the same today. It's just something I love to do and have fun with and don't take it too seriously. If things happen, great, great. If things don't happen, great, great. But I'm having fun, you know? So, cool. But anyway, I was never into the scene or anything like that or any of the, I have no, you know, fun, I don't know. I wasn't part of the system, I guess.
You had your own scene. You had your own fun times that were
pretty, I was my own scene. I had
they
my
were so fun
they
and
were.
Everyone would play music and hang out and catch up.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't club based or you know, substance based, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
I liked coming over there occasionally.
Yeah.
Thanks
yeah,
for
yeah.
having me.
Yeah, we had some fun
good times.
Yeah.
I'm like, did you already play Sweet Home Alabama? You're like twice.
Sure.
Let's do it again.
Exactly. And Landslide by Stevie Nicks.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks.
Cool, man. Well, I just want to say good stuff.
Thanks,
and,
buddy.
You know, I watched The Karate Kid on the side of a garage in Echo Park like 4 years ago at this big party, and it was a great time, and I just want to say a big fan.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that very much. There's another
one
coming up.
One, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, man. Was that Martin Cove? He seemed like a lot of inside info.
It was Marty. Go out there and hurt him.
Have you ever worked
I want with another minor to go hurt another minor.
Did you ever work with Marty?
No, he's good friends with, I grew up with Gabe Jarrett, who was Gabe Kronsberg. His dad was Jeremy Joe Kronsberg, who wrote Every Which Way But Loose and directed Going
Ape.
Okay. And Marty would be around, and he'd be around Malibu and just that kind of scene. So I knew Marty, and I was repped by him by the same agent for a while, too.
Right, right.
I think maybe still be. I don't even remember who my agent is, but
he's at Maverick.
He's at Maverick, okay.
Yeah, I talk to Marty all the time. You should get Marty in here, man. He'll do it.
Oh, that'd be great.
You want me to get Marty to come in?
Fans would go nuts.
Get Gabe Jarrett in here.
Get Gabe in here.
Real that'd genius.
Great. Yeah. We'll get Gabe in here. That'd be fun.
Just get all these guys in here.
I can't believe
Hey, man, I had to see you somehow. You have to have a radio show for us to hook up. So we're so busy. Like, it had to happen this way. You know what I mean? Like, on air. The first time I'm talking to you is with a headset on.
That's show business, man.
That is show biz. That is the business of show.
You look great, and that's the comments on our pictures already online we've posted.
Oh,
and
that's
comments already.
Oh,
they say you look like the same you looked 25, 30 years ago.
Wow.
Is it, and I have to just ask you, because I look like a, you know.
You look fantastic.
A lizard. Sun damage, man. You look this Nordic, beautiful, pale, perfect visage. What did you do? Surgery, or is it just good genes?
Shut up.
Knock
that off.
You look great. You just stay in shape, obviously. I'm not a fitness kind of a guy.
Come on, man.
Diet?
Really? I don't know.
Did you party?
Like,
you didn't ever party?
No, the truth is, I never did one. I smoked pot when I was 16. Stopped at 16. Tried it again in my 30s. Never did one hard drug in my life. I've had coke, like, basically, you know, almost stuffed up my nose. Never tried it. No drugs, nothing. Don't drink. I drink a lot of coffee, man, though, I tell you that, you know. I mean, the hours I pull. I mean, I get most creative. I'm like a night owl, like 10, 11 o'clock, bam, lights are on, you know. So I don't know. I got a kid now. I got a beautiful little two-year-old dude. You want to see him? And he keeps me young, I'll tell you that. Because he's like jumping off stuff and running around, and you know, I gotta try to stay, you know. But I swim a lot, and then the oxygen tank, you know, got that going.
Hyperbaric chamber. Eating the live the fetuses of third world children. Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Dove's blood. That's my favorite line.
Hold on
30 Rock.
This.
They're like, Jack, you look great. What's your secret? He goes, Dove's blood.
Here, dude, I got to show you. I'm like, this is my kid's first fake headshot.
Oh, I saw that.
You saw that?
Wow, yeah, good looking
great.
Kid, man.
Isn't that funny?
He's a great looking kid. He's a star.
He's so
he's
funny, man.
Star.
Would you put him into show business?
You know what? Every day I think I'm like, this kid is alive. He's magic. And I just don't want to, man. I will, at least not now. Because everybody's like, dude, why isn't he in commercials? He needs to be in commercials. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't mind him being in show business. No, the business of show business, no, I don't mind. Being an actor, I don't know. But you know what? That's how my dad felt. My dad was on the set when I'm like, I want to be an actor. He's like, don't be an actor. He's like, he was an AD. He's like, some of the worst people I know. I have to get them out of their trailer. They're all bitchy. Don't be that guy, you know. But then he goes, but I know you won't. But I always remembered that because, I mean, he'd come home with some nightmare stories of people that he was working with that were just like, you know, not ready to come out of their motorhome and would scream at him as the first, you know. And he would just be like, oof, you know. So I don't know. But if he discovers it and it's organic and it's cool and it's balanced, and it, which it will be, because, you know, life is not only a show business in my house. You know, I'm a river raft guide and play guitar. And
a river raft guide?
Correct. That is the truth.
Wow. Yeah, Where do you go rafting?
Well, actually, my family, we're not really operating right now because we kind of like, it's kind of just not running the groups anymore. And now my sister and brother-in-law really are the ones that own the company. But I've been rafting since I was 15. And then my sister actually hunted down, my brother-in-law was the head guide on the Klamath River in Northern California. And we used to go on these great trips, like 10 miles a day, you know, and 5-day trips. And she met this river raft guide and chased him down and became a guide herself. And then they became guides. And then we would go every year. And then I would become, I got grafted into the guiding and my brother would. So we have big three big boats, three rafts and kayaks, and do the Klamath River. I've guided on the Kern River, the American, the Snake, and class threes, sometimes class four. They go to six. Six is impossible. Five is nuts. Class fours, depending on the kind of rapid it is, like there's technical four and then there's fun four. Fun four is like big, huge white water. You might get kicked out, but you're going to end up downstream. We can pull you out. A technical four is like there's a tree branch stricken at you, you know, and you're going fast and you got to get around that.
Sounds like a five to me.
That would be, you know, that could be a five. Yeah. I've had some gnarly things happen on the river, but there's nothing like that for me. And skiing, although I haven't really skied in the last 4 years, which I'm bummed on. And I haven't rafted in the last 4 years either, actually since I got married. So not that it's that fault, but it's like your life takes a different shape. Now I got a kid. It's like, I don't know. But he's almost at the age where I can start, you know, going up and doing that again. But yeah, so, but you know, life.
Pizza slice.
Exactly.
There's a great video online of a kid doing like 40 down a hill.
Oh, is that?
And the dad's yelling, pizza wedge. Kid's trying to, he's just screaming and he's hauling balls down.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
Is he's that like, new?
Like four. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a few weeks ago.
Oh, it's I got to check that out.
the internet and digital and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And for you to make stuff and be behind the camera. And when you jump in front as an actor, do you take a lead or do you take a small role, a bit, a scene or two? Or how much do you give yourself as an actor on one of those projects?
Like if I'm making it? No, yeah. I'm not even in it.
You're not even in it?
No, except for Sweep the Leg, which I wrote for myself and produced and directed and all that. But everything else I'm not even in. I don't do it. I would. I mean, I'm doing this little fun little thing on the side, this little test pilot thing. Not really, I don't even call it a pilot, just a test comedy half hour show. And so I'm directing that and I'm in it. And that's really fun. But my first thing I ever directed was a movie called B Movie that nobody ever saw, the making of a low budget sci-fi movie. Really funny. And I was in that one. But that was like, it's crazy because, you know, you're acting and I'd literally do my scene. And as I exit the scene, I would run around and, you know, get to the monitor. And it's just a lot of balls to juggle. And also it's weird too when you're an actor, working with an actor and you're the director. It's like, you know, in a scene, you have to completely lose yourself in the scene, sort of. And, you know, you're both kind of like looking to the director. If you're that guy, it's always a little bit like weird because you have to be sort of objective and subjective at the same time. So I prefer to choose one or the other, really, you know.
Did you learn to make movies in film school or from working?
From working. I learned a lot about writing in film school. Didn't learn anything actually, really. I mean, my film school was the sets. My film school was, you know, cozying up to DPs and, you know, grips and gaffers and, you know. And I think what's really cool and what's fun is being an actor that's a director is like when you're the actor, you're friends with craft service, you're friends with the Teamsters, you're like,
you got time.
But you know how to relate. You relate to them on a way that's like, hey, what's up? You know, it's really cool. So when you're on the other end of the camera, there's some filmmakers that, you know, they hire their crew, but they don't, I don't know, they don't embrace them sort of, you know, not all of them, but so my tone, and this is like, here I am in Eastern Europe working with, you know, Czech speaking crew, Polish speaking crew, and German speaking crew. and dealing with some like Steadicam wizard, this best Steadicam guy in the world, and knowing how to get more out of him without insulting him and doing it in a way. It's like a lot of being a director is really being really diplomatic and, you know, and fair and listen. You have open ears, but make decisions and, you know, and get, and let them have a sense that you know what you're doing. And
if you're good, you have a green light to be kind of a bastard to get what you want.
Well, true. And sometimes you do have to. I mean, there was a day, one day I was in Prague shooting this short film that I did, 33 minutes, and it's a great film. You need to see it. It's really great. Amazing cast. Like all Eastern Europe, really organic, great actors. And our first shoot was in Poland, and our drawbridge broke and our 1930 steam train couldn't go over the bridge. And our whole shoot hinged on that. It was like a $30,000 day. And we brought our crew from Prague through Germany into Poland. We brought a train from like another part of Poland to this bridge, 1930s World War II drawbridge. The day we get there, it's -7 degrees. The thing snaps, breaks. So we have to stay there for 2 extra days. The steam train that we went to rent, we got from these guys that told us it was going to be like $1,000 a day for the 10 cars and the driver, $1,500 a day. And when we went to pick up the steam train, we find out that we're dealing with is the guys are actually the Polish mafia. And you have to pay off each guy along the way. And they didn't say $1,500 a day. They said $15,000 a day. So now we're in our post budget. So we shell out $15,000 to get the train to the bridge that breaks. And now we got to keep the train at the bridge 2 more days. So it's just ching, 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 $45,000. Just have the train there. And so we went over budget. And now we're back in Prague and we're trying to finish up the shoot. And our production crew, our production service people that we hooked up with in Prague knew we were out of money. And we had 1 more day the next day. And it was like all our money shots. And our on the ground lady texted, she was our like our line producer, and she's the one that hired all these European crew for us. She sent out a blast text to my entire crew on a train saying, don't come tomorrow, they're out of money. And all of a sudden, the whole crew goes cold, they're dragging their feet, and the whole, our last day is about to explode. And I just turned into the big, and what happened was I had some good friends. I made really good friends with those guys. And they're like, you need to know what your production people are doing. And we just all got this text. So I went through the roof, man. I mean, I was never more upset in my life. And I just tore up. And I said, you need to come to my apartment right now. You need to bring all your receipts and your accounting and everything. And I want to see how much money you have because I gave you $80,000 last week. And I want to see where every penny is that you have because I know you didn't spend it all. And she was trying to keep it for contingency and stuff. So she came up and we went through every penny and turns out 4 o'clock in the morning, she had $35,000, which is what we needed for the next day. I said, 4 in the morning, you need to text every single person right now that they better be on the set tomorrow. And I was so pissed off. And she did. And they all showed up. But the thing, a caveat was none of them believed that we had the money. So I made her put I made her put all the money in envelopes for each crew person. So when they showed up at work in the morning, they got their envelope with their money in before. But like, if I didn't turn into that jackass. I mean, really, I was livid. And it was like 2 months of prep to get to this day, you know. And still, we had to go back in the summer and shoot it because we didn't get everything at the bridge. So anyway, it's a crazy story. But that's like the production stuff. I love that stuff.
All the stuff, the obstacles of making movies aren't really about the making the movie part. It's always the neighbors and the noise and the access or the parking or the boat you got to get into or... You know, the thing that's not working or the cover set. That's always fun.
Oh, yeah.
Last minute. It's like, oh, yeah. By the way, remember that like four-page monologue?
As an actor, that's where I did a little cameo in Hot Tub Time Machine last year.
Yeah, you did.
And it was, dude, I got to tell you something. That was like, I came home and I'm like, why am I trying to be a filmmaker? I just want to be an actor again. There's nothing like showing up in the morning, getting a burrito with eggs and beans in it. You know what I'm saying? Laying in your trailer and watching some stupid, you know, Good Morning LA or something, you know, have them drag you to the set, do a walkthrough, go back and sleep for 5 hours, come back out and watch them troubleshoot and put all the fires out. And every minute that goes by, you know, that's overtime is like benefits you. There's nothing like it. I mean, it's really, I have to say being an actor is a lot more of not an easier job because actually the craft of acting is, you know, isn't easy, but as the your responsibility of running a show and a crew and producing, you know, that's
it. It sounds like through will, you get it done. Through your just will, your sheer will, you birth the movie. You make it happen. You get around the obstacles.
Well, yeah.
You see Cecil B. DeMille.
I did a music video for The Rascal Flatts. Are you in the country at all? Mm-hmm. And they came in with a song.
Oh, did I say,
Do you like the Rascal Flatts?
Not in the country.
Okay. Kind of like, well, they're like the top selling country band ever.
No, I do. I'm aware of the country.
They're awesome. It's, they're good buddies of mine. I mean, I love these guys. They're like my brothers. And they sent me a song and they said, hey, we're kind of thinking of doing something kind of hangover-ish with this. And we want to give you a shot to possibly direct one of these. And, you know, so can you come up with something? So I said, well, yeah. So I actually wrote a literal spoof of The Hangover in Las Vegas. Like they're thinking, I don't know what they were thinking, but I wrote like a 7-page music video treatment. And these treatments are usually like a page and a half because the artists don't have time to read them. They're like, yeah, that looks good, you know? And the manager signs off, everybody signs off. I wrote a script and then they pulled the trigger. So now I get the video. So I go to Vegas, but I got nothing, dude. I got no hotel. I got no gambling tables. I got no actors. I don't have a lead for it. And I've got 2 weeks to pull together all this stuff to shoot in 2 days. And I'm like, I got to get a star. I got to get an actor to play up opposite them. I got to get everybody in Vegas to be in this thing. So we ended up getting through many channels, got in touch with David Arquette, sent him an email and said why he's perfect for this. And he's like, oh, I'm doing Scream 4. He goes, but you know, I might be able to work it out. So he was there, I had him on hold, and then Carrot Top jumped on, and then Wayne Newton jumped on, and Penn and Teller jumped on, and then Ron White, the comedian Ron White, killing jumped on. Me. So all these great actors, like it started lining up, and then, you know, I got to shoot this hotel scene. So we shot at the Palms and worked out a deal with the Maloofs, the guys that used to own the Palms, you know, the Maloof brothers are. Unless I think the Sacramento Kings, they're like super zillionaires, or whatever. So they own the Palms, and one of my producers gets in with him, and so we get the whole casino for free. We get this suite that's like $30,000 a night for 3 days for free, and then we also had the guy from Pawn Stars, the main guy Rick. Pawn Stars. Yeah. He's in it too. But basically, I set up this
video. I was thinking like $1,000. Yeah, I'll give you $50.
But you gotta watch. You gotta watch the video because it's like it's like 40 setups a day. We shot all over Las Vegas and basically told the guys that were coming in that you're not making really a music video. You're making a mini movie. And you know, while we're shooting this, my team's prepping the next setup. So we don't have the money to keep you in your motorhomes. You're going to be basically in, you know, a 15 passenger van or a smaller motorhome if that's okay. Kind of like. Just because it was so ambitious, this video.
There's blackjack tables right over there.
Dude, we had so much fun. It was a blast. This is the best. It was so much fun, this music video. It was unbelievable. But but making that happen at the, you know, all the way down to the wire was nuts. We did a scene, you know, in Vegas, if you're going to do a shoot using all the backdrops of all the hotels and casinos and everything, it's a permit. It's like, it's an expensive permit. And it takes
like
a lot of time.
Like a sign or something like that. Yeah. You got to have a...
But you can't... Yeah, but we with the end of our day, our last thing, I'm like, well, we need to get you guys in this convertible with our fake Elvis and drive down the strip, but we don't have a permit for it. So we just went for it. And I had a convertible, a Chrysler LeBaron, and I had this, my DP on the back of the camera on the back of the car with his big anamorphic lens thing, and he wasn't even strapped in. I got the monitor in the front seat. We got the convertible with Elvis and David Arquette and the Rascal Flatts going down the boulevard, and we're shooting, and we look like a major movie going down the, and we're going to get pulled over. It's a matter of time. And in front of their car was this giant Escalade with their security team and everything and their managers. So we're driving down, and I mean, we went 3 or 4 blocks and the cops pull us over, and I'm like, oh gosh. So everybody's like, all the walkie talkies like, shh, cops pull, shh, you know. So I'm sitting there in the front seat, and the cops walk up to me and they're like, hey, how you doing? Good. They're like, what are you guys doing? And I'm like, well, I said, we got, you know, Rascal Flatts and David Arquette in that car over there. I said, we're doing like a little promo video on Vegas, you know, a little thing to bring more attraction to get some more people to come in here for you guys and stuff. And the guy's like nodding at me, and I'm like, and we're shooting a music video too, you know, like also on the side, we're shooting a little music video, but it's pretty much just a big free promotional for you guys. And he goes, you guys have a permit? And I'm like, oh, really? No, I didn't, what kind of permit? You need a permit? I'm like, we're just shooting at the car. I go, we'll put the camera away. And then he goes, and he walks up to the guy. I go, and then I listen to my phone's ringing, and the manager's like, how's it going? I'm like, I think you need to talk to these guys. So the cops walk over to the managers, and then this like 500-pound big black bodyguard gets out with them. And they all talk for a minute, and then the cops kind of came by, and they were young cops, and they kind of like said, have fun, be safe, get it done.
Oh,
get it done
great.
Quick. Yeah. And that was a $10,000 fine.
Oh,
that was a $10,000 fine right there.
Wow.
Yeah. So like that's how you get stuff done. And it looks great. The shot is amazing. So Yeah, so I love it. I love the whole thing. I love the challenge of it. It's kind of hairy, though, because I didn't have, like, when you're dealing with big labels and music videos and stuff, they award a certain amount of money. Like, they'll say, here's your budget. But they'll want to know where every penny's going before they cut you a check. So here I am in Vegas with, yeah, there it is right there. Here I am in Vegas without a penny. And I've got to hire all these people, and but I don't have the money yet. We didn't get our money until like really close towards the end. So it was really nuts, man. It was just a really hard thing. But yeah, there's a Rascal Flatts. Why wait?
Check it out, people. Support check it, the check arts. It, peeps.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun.
It looks money.
Dude, it's 35 anamorphic. It's super, super awesome.
It's like Don't Cry from Guns N' Roses. It looks great. There's Garrett Topp. Awesome.
Yeah.
He's, that looks great. I loved the sweep the leg. I have to admit.
That was fun.
I went through the roof when I saw that.
Did you? That was fun.
I really did.
It was fun to do something. You know, it's kind of risky when you're playing with your legacy. Like, you know that. You know what I mean? Like, there's like a fine line because you got your fans. It's like there's a respect that I have for the movie and for the things. It's like, do I want to leave it alone? Do I, you know, I don't need to do anything. But, you know, these guys came to me with the song and they're like, they wanted me in their video and I wasn't crazy about doing their thing. I'm like, if you'll let me create this a certain way and fund it, maybe it's okay. But until the day it dropped, I was nervous that like people were going to hate it. Like, I didn't know how I was going to respond, you know?
Also getting Ralph in at the end was great.
he was great though. He came in at the last minute. Like I was trying to get him in there when we shot the first shoot and he was like, oh man, I'd love to. It sounds really ambitious and great. And I'm like, I'm going to get you in this, man. He's like, well, I'm in New York. I wish I knew earlier and all this. I'm like, no worries. So we shoot the whole thing up to the point where I'm rollerblading and then it cuts to black. And then I put a card up and on the rough cut, the whole video is there except the end. It was a black card that said, Ralph wants you in car. And we put a screeching sound, hits me, you know. So I send him the whole video and showed him where he's going to fit in. And he's like, he goes, yeah, all right, I'm in, you know. So it took him, then he was in. He's like, I go, you got to put the button on this, man. Otherwise, I walk away with the trophy. Like, come back and claim your prize, you know. So he was great, man. Ralph's a great guy. You know Ralph, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's super cool. Yeah.
That was, Ralph and I both looked a little younger than we may have been. And you get work for that.
That's right, yeah.
You get work for that reason.
You started when you were what, 10 or younger?
Five or six?
Yeah.
McDonald's Dude. Commercials and all that stuff. Oh, the commercials and some a failed ABC pilot off in Hawaii. I was
Were you doing like kids stuff? I forgot. Were you like? I mean, I knew you as you were in your teen years, but were you as a kid? Were you doing television? Acting? Really?
I did the guest appearances on all of these on Chips and Love Boat and Fantasy Island, A's Enough, Mork and Mindy, Vernon Shirley.
Shoot.
All that.
Did you ever do the Love Boat?
The Waltons for a year.
Did you ever do Love Boat?
I did a Love Boat. I did a 90-minute.
My dad was an AD in the Love Boat.
I got excited because I thought we were going to a cruise. I'm like, it's a 90-minute. It's not the hour. We're going to go on a cruise. And they go, no, the 2 hours go on a cruise. 90 minutes still stage 20 at Fox. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, it's just a pool. I know.
I love the set though. Do you ever playing around on that set?
Yeah, man. That was the first thing I ever did on television. And I didn't have an agent. I was just like right from New York. That was the first show my dad was on as an AD. And he got me as an extra swimming in that pool. And Jacqueline Smith was a guest star on that. And I was so in love with her. And I remember I was on a raft in the pool. And we watched that episode that night, and I was staring in the camera the whole time. All I was doing was swimming back and forth in the pool, looking in the lens. That was my first thing.
We're going to take a short break here in a few minutes when we'll be pausing. You wave your arms really wildly, like in Team America, like it's the signal. You can hang out for another minutes here.
Man, it's Saturday night. I got nothing to do.
I love it. So do our listeners. Thanks for listening to The Call Sheet. Keith Coogan, Earl Skakel here with Billy fucking Zabka.
That is my actual middle name.
It is. Not even danger. We'll be right back. Right. Thanks for listening.